offering her most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of the Afternoon Satsang. This is Prem, and with me is Sai Prakash, and we're coming to you live from our studios at Prashanthi Nilayam. As promised last time, we are here to take you through another episode of the summary of the book Conversations with Bhagwan Sri Sat Sai Baba that we have just concluded. And one of the queries that came to us was if we could bring together all the points that is discussed in this book, especially about the organization and the Sai centers, especially because Dr. Hislop was himself the chairman of the American organization. He played a very important role in setting up the centers there. He's one of the office bearers with whom Swami interacted and explained some of these things that Swami wanted to be implemented in the center and the organization, some of the important aspects about the functioning of the organization itself. So we thought we'll bring together some of these points and discuss them. And it'll also give us a better idea of what Swami envisioned for the organization as such. So before we get into that with pranams to Swami, let's invite Sai Prakash to join all of us. Sairam Sai Prakash.
Sairam Prem. Sairam, dear listeners. Today is indeed a very, very beautiful topic we are going to discuss about, because Swami has, you know, in all his love and compassion, given his name to this organization. And Swami has allowed the organization to be called as Sri Satya Sai Seva Organization.
Right.
And that in itself is such a great blessing. And we have this saying, are you true to the name? So I think being true to the name that is given to the organization is being true to Swami. In fact, there's a beautiful quote from the year 1970 when there was a question of who are the people who are officers, who are eligible to be officers in the Sai organization. Swami says, choose men and women who have unshaken faith in this present avatar with this name and form. The leaders of these units lead because they have the vision and the yearning, not because they have the votes or the purse. The bliss they derive is the only reward they are after. I think, end of quote. This is so beautiful because Swami says it is the love and the conviction and the devotion they have for this avatar, the avatar in this name and form.
Right.
And so if you are a part of the Sri Satya Sai organization, obviously the first, you can't say requirement, the first understanding or the first expectation also is not the right word. It is an experience. You have love and reverence for Swami, and that is the reason you want to join the Sri Satya Sai Seva organization. And so Swami clearly says, people can come and join and then understand and explore. But if you want somebody to be appointed in a post of an officer in the Sai organization, such a person should definitely have unshaken faith in the present avatar with this name and form. And he says, it is not by a voting system or not by the fact that somebody has more wealth compared to the others, but it is people who are doing this as an act of love. In a sense of, they're doing this because this is what gives them bliss and happiness. He says that is the only criterion by which you should select such officers. And there's another small quote where Swami says, officers should not be regarded as positions of authority or as prizes for devotion. They should be accepted with humility and exercised with love. Such a beautiful statement. Coming back to Dr. Hislop, Swami had appointed him the head of the Satya Sai organizations, overseas wing of Satya Sai organizations. And he was definitely one person who was very focused on the message. And as we can see in all his conversations with Swami, had asked several questions about practical aspects of the organization as well. Apart from questions on spiritual sadhana, he has asked practical questions as well. And if I just come to think of it, even such a renowned organization like the Ramakrishna Paramahamsa organization, which is established by Swami Vivekananda, Swami Vivekananda did not have the opportunity to directly ask questions about the organization to Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. Isn't it true?
Right.
Like, after the time of Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, the organization was set up. But Swami is so compassionate and so loving that in his lifetime, the organization was formed and Swami gave so many discourses specially directed towards the members of the organizations, the Sevadal, the Balvikas, the youth groups, and the officers, office bearers, etc. And Swami has explained all aspects. So I think in this book, we have got certain perspectives and certain questions we can go through one by one.
Right. And even as you were reading out that passage from Swami's discourse where he said, office bearers should not look at position as a reward,
right?
As a status that is being granted to them, so to say. Just a couple of days back, we were talking to an former student.
Mm-hmm.
I think he has now been given some responsibility in the organization.
Okay,
right. I think maybe the center or the region or something like that. And he said that the moment it was told to me, I said, I mean, there's so many more worthy people who should be getting this. Why is Swami giving me this responsibility? I'm a very ordinary person. I'm just, taking some SSC classes and all that. Why is such a big opportunity being given to me? So he went into his altar room or wherever he has Swami's in the chair. He sat there and he was saying that, Swami, what should I do? What is your instruction to me? And imagine, he just recollected an episode which happened when he was a student.
Okay.
Right. Totally unrelated. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, that episode struck him. And that was the message that Swami wanted him to recollect at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, he had acted as a king in one of the dramas.
Okay.
Right. And a lot of effort was put into dressing him up, and a very nice crown was made,
mm-hmm.
and all that. Yeah. A very grand looking occasion where he was dressed up fully. And when Swami, the drama was over, Swami returned to the mandir, and I think the drama happened in the auditorium.
Right.
So Pune all the students, auditorium. In the institute auditorium.
Okay.
So they all decided to go to mandir so that Swami will give them the chance to, take photos with them. So he was a little hesitant to go, so well decked up. Those were the days where you had to walk. There were no cars and things like that. So he said, I can't go to the mandir dressed up like this. Everybody will be looking at me. So some of his classmates said, don't worry, we'll take you. And they literally took a rickshaw, which the hostel had that time. They, rode it and they took him to the mandir. And as soon as he entered, Swami looked at him and said, here you are. I was looking for you.
Okay.
I said, where is that boy who had dressed up like that? His costume was so nice. So he was very happy. And Swami was giving pictures with all of them. So when he was trying to take Swami's Pad Namaskar, he was not able to because the crown was obstructing. Right? Then Swami also said, when there is a crown in your head, how will you touch my feet? How will you bow down to my feet? And he just recollected that episode.
My God.
And he was filled with so much of emotion. Swami is saying, don't look at this as a crown that is being placed on you. This is an opportunity that is being given to you. As long as you look at it that way, you can bow down to my feet.
It's not even a prize for devotion, as Swami is saying.
Absolutely.
Don't think that, this is a reward for all my devotion and love for Swami.
Right. This is a responsibility that is being given, an opportunity to serve.
Right.
Not a crown that is being placed on your head. Right? And the reason why it's very important to go through these, as you said, Swami has himself very clearly said what is the organization meant to do, what this opportunity of being in the organization is supposed to confer on you. There's another beautiful discourse. We keep going back to this many times. It's a discourse that Swami gave in 1967, 21st of April. Where Swami says this, I'll probably read out that quickly.
Mm-hmm.
He says, a spiritual organization is really above all rules and regulations. The realm of the Atma is beyond the limits of regulations. In this sense, rules are either meaningless or superfluous in the Satya Sai organizations.
My God.
But at least to satisfy the law of the land dealing with associations of this kind, some rules have to be adopted. For example, who can be members of these organizations and what are their qualifications? Swami says, number one, of course, they must be eager aspirants for spiritual progress. Number two, they must have full faith in the name of the organization, the name the organization bears, and in spreading that name in the manner suited to its message and majesty. Right, what you had mentioned. And the third thing is, besides, the members must have won recognition as a good person.
Wow.
Right? Swami says, so these are the three qualities required to be a member of the Satya Sai organization. And the most beautiful thing is what follows. And Swami says, that is all the qualification needed. Nothing else counts. There is no need to have money or lands or scholarship, influence or authority or official position. If you have the three qualifications mentioned, I assure you, even if you have no place in any organization bearing my name, you will have a place here. Baba indicated his heart as place where he will be accepted.
Wow. That's the ultimate.
This is during the first All India Conference that was held in Madras.
In 1967.
67.
My goodness.
So Swami said, this is all is required to be in the organization. If after all this also, there may be a possibility that you don't find a place in the organization, but you'll find a place here. Pointing to his heart. And what is more important, we all know that.
Mm.
Right? So that, I think that to start off with that first point, which Swami says, to have complete faith in the name the organization bears.
Right.
Swami giving his own name to the organization and saying that that is the primary thing. Why are we all in the Sri Satya Sai organization, in the Central Trust, in the media center?
Right.
We should have complete faith in that name. And there is a very beautiful quote by Rumi.
Mm-hmm.
He says, by praising the Lord,
mm-hmm.
you don't praise the Lord, you sanctify your life.
Oh.
He says, he's got nothing to do with your praise. He doesn't gain any glory by you praising him.
Right.
But if you praise his name, you sanctify your life.
Right? Mm.
So I think that is what is the gain that is there to be got by having faith in the name and furthering that name.
Also, one point which came out in this passage, Swami said, it is a spiritual organization. Yes, we are calling Sri Satya Sai Seva organization. But in spirit, it's a spiritual organization, and you need to have that desire, that interest in a spiritual way of life. In fact, there was an incident where one of the elders from the organization asked Swami about, when Seva is being done overseas, when Seva is being done, the youth especially, they are friends. And if we put in too many strict rules, like the boys should be separate and the girls should be separate, if the genders, they are not allowed to talk to each other, and they have to, when they're doing seva, if they're not able to, allowed to work together, then is it allowed, Swami? Because that kind of culture is what is there in the West. And Swami says no. And then the elder then asks Swami, he says, Swami, if that is the case, then many may not turn up for seva.
Mm-hmm.
Then Swami says, but let them not come. This is not a seva organization. This is a spiritual organization. Seva is an activity which you are doing with the purpose and the focus that you want a spiritual life. Spirituality and your, as Swami said, as far as the Atma is concerned, there are no rules. But then for the law of the land and for certain discipline that is there in the organization, there are certain rules. And obviously Swami says, yes, men and women will be separate when they are doing the activities of the Sai organization. And so Swami said, let them not come. But this is a spiritual organization. And this is how it shall be.
Absolutely. I think both the things, seva and the purpose behind seva, as that being a spiritual organization. The first point that Swami makes there is you should be a spiritual aspirant.
Right, right.
It's not that you use this as a chance to do per se good activity. That's it. You don't need an organization to do that. You don't need this setup for charity in that sense.
Correct.
It should be a spiritual motive.
Right.
And in fact, talking about this idea of using the organization to, in a way, make it a place where people are able to come and relate to Swami's message. That is very important. There's a conversation in the book where Hislop says this. Swami, not all present centers devote themselves entirely to the Sai teachings.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami responds to that by saying, at present, some people form their own organizations and use the Sai Center name as a tool to promote their own interest and ends.
Mm.
Some leaders have a yoga business and use the Sai name as a way to add to the business.
Mm.
And Hislop says, what to do about such, is the prominent leader an exception to the rule? The rule that a leader of a Sai Center cannot carry on yoga classes or any classes related to spiritual sadhana and charge the students money? And Swami says, Swami is not aware of any such exceptions. Hislop says, I understand the same principle applies to all. Probably such a leader will at once say that entirely apart from their yoga business, they will continue to be an officer of a Sai center. And Swami says, how would that be practical? There would still be the same mixture. Such individuals will have to decide to go one way or the other. Two ways at once will not do. And that will be the case for everyone. Those devotees who wish to determine a separate path for their organizations are quite free to do so.
Mm.
So very clear. When we are talking about organization, the moment you say a word organization, I think you cannot keep discipline out of that.
Mm.
There is rule, there is a certain way, there is a certain protocol that needs to be done. Cannot help but take a reference from the Gita where Arjuna asks Krishna, which is the pathway which is right?
Mm.
Is it sannyasa or is it being in the world?
Mm-hmm.
So Krishna says they are two nishtas. That is the word he uses.
Mm-hmm.
He says that is one nishta, this is one nishta. The word nishta means if you take to that, you have to stick to that.
Ah,
it's a discipline.
Right.
And he says both will lead you to the goal,
but
choose one nishta and you stick to that. Right. So when you say an organization, when you say a Satasai organization, it is a pathway. If you take a different pathway, the same Swami is going to be your companion, is going to be your strength, is going to be your inspiration.
Right.
But if you take to this nishta, these are the rules that have to be followed. I think Swami is very, very clear and categorical about that.
Very beautiful. In fact, there's this other conversation with Hislop. Swami is asking him, what is your work in America? And he says, I am retired and do no work. Then how do you pass the days? Mostly the day is spent with Swami. It starts with Swami in the morning and goes through the day. I work at my desk trying to make sense of my financial affairs. And then there are many tasks in relation to the house. But really, Bhagwan is our life. Our discrimination, added to by our direct experience, tells us that Baba is God Himself. So what else is there? What else can there be? Then Swami says, it is a good opportunity for you to study Sai's teachings. Then Hislop asks Swami, he says, Swami must tell me what he wants the chairman of the Central Committee of America to do. That will be my work now. And he says this conversation took place in the early 70s. Swami says, you will need to do quite a bit of touring, visiting the Sai centers. For this, since you have now retired, you should not pay out of your own pocket. The details with which Swami... So then Hislop says, Swami, I don't worry much about the money. I am a financial idiot and it can only be by Swami's grace that I am not flat broke by now. When I visit centers, Swami, they will expect discourses. What shall I talk? What shall I talk? Swami says, speak on the principles of spiritual life, on those things that Swami says are essential to reach God. The spiritual life, such as discipline, devotion, sadhana, be clear, do your duty calmly, and the goal will be reached in due course. Then Hislop asks, Swami's teaching is clear enough, and that can be said. Then Swami says, what is needed most now is that the devotees must have tolerance of each other, and they do not have any seasoned discrimination in respect to the many gurus and their various spiritual paths. They have not had the face-to-face confrontation with Swami that you have had, and you have considerable background in spiritual life and they have not. You must carry them along with you. The new rules of centers that will be in the guidelines will shake many centers. And Swami says, that will be the case. Sai centers must reflect the distinctive character of our organization. There cannot be a mixing of a Satya Sai Baba center with the many gurus and many spiritual paths. We have our goal. Swami has shown the path to follow, and we must quietly and sincerely devote ourselves to that path. The leaders must provide the example in their conduct. So I think it's very, very beautiful and very clear. Like you said before, if you have chosen this path, if you have chosen to be a part of this organization, lead your life based on this, that nishtha, you follow this path. In fact, I remember Professor Venkatraman sharing.
Mm-hmm.
He asked Swami, between Dvaitam, Vishishta Advaitam and Advaitam, which is the best path?
Mm-hmm.
Between dualism, qualified non-dualism and
non-dualism.
Which is the best path? He was expecting Swami to say that Advaitam is the best and all that. Then Swami said, for the person following the path of Dvaitam, Dvaitam is the best path. For the person following Advaitam, Advaitam is the best path. For the person following Vishishta Advaitam, Vishishta Advaitam is the best path.
Beautiful.
So in the same way, I think those who have chosen to come into the fold of the Sai organization, yes, Swami has given you a way of life. Swami has given you a definition of what a spiritual life is. You can follow that path.
Absolutely. And it's very clear, many times when we've had this discussion in other satsangs or in other forums, if you really look at it, if you were to go into Swami's literature, what Swami speaks about spirituality is actually very open.
Right.
Right. What is required for spirituality is very simple, basic. Swami will go down to love and discipline and dharma and all of that, right? Which is not... there is nothing, Swami would say, no, there is no America dharma, Russia dharma.
Exactly.
Dharma. Dharma is universal.
Right.
Love is universal. Devotion is universal. So spirituality cannot be put in any of those things. But there is always a pathway, right? And when there is a pathway, anybody who is taking to that pathway has two roles. You know, one is, first of all, to progress on that and to reach the goal, right? That is the first duty towards that pathway. The next duty is to those people who will be taking that same pathway after you, right? Many times Swami would say this. I mean, the best example you would find in that are the teachers who would stay with us in the hostel.
Correct.
You know, they have lived through that discipline and they've come to a point where they don't need that discipline anymore to remain focused on Swami, right? But they will still follow the discipline of the hostel so that it is that way by which they're keeping the system intact for those who are coming thereafter to be able to follow. So I think that is what it is. I mean, when you are in the Satya Sai organization, if you're in the center, there is no doubt that you don't need an organization, you don't need a center to move closer to Swami. Right? But having being in the organization, being in the center, I think it becomes the responsibility of those individuals to keep that center as close as that. That's what Swami is saying here. It should reflect Swami's philosophy, principle and teachings.
Correct.
Going into a center, it should give us an experience of this is what Swami's message is all about. And I think that duty is there with each office bearer and each member of the organization.
Right. Then there's another interesting conversation. He says, one leader I know has a dual personality. And this is something which a lot of people face in the SAI organization and in any organization, anywhere. Because in a sense, all of us are drawn to Swami and we are being chiseled. We all are under the process of getting reformed. But then along the way, you find these practical problems. And he says, one leader I know has a dual personality. In some cases, the individual is extremely kind-hearted. And in others, if a devotee crosses the leader in any way, it is off with his head and he is gone from the scene. So then Swami says, that is the way of the world. Kindness is used with people. But when people do wrong, they must be corrected sternly. Swami does the same. To those who act according to His command and obey Him, He gives everything to fill their wants and needs. But if after a long treatment of love and patience, they still disobey, Swami gives severe punishment. He gives it because of His love for the person and because He knows that if He does not punish the person, if He does not punish, the person is spoilt. Then Hislop says, but there's a considerable difference. With Swami, it is God Almighty who punishes, whereas in the other case, it is the leader of a center, a personality who does the punishing. Swami says, yes, it is as you say. Sai rewards and punishes without self. When humans reward and punish, there is self-interest. Yes, Hislop says, self-interest is there. When the individual of whom I spoke help some people in trouble with remarkable generosity, the individual put in a stipulation that on the surface was also generous, but which resulted in people repaying the generosity with much service. So it was more like a deal. I am helping you, but you better do what I tell you. So something like that. Then Swami says, that was all right. The individual helped the people and they should show gratitude. Unless a person can show gratitude to another being at his own level, how can he expect to show gratitude to the divine? So it is a very interesting conversation. Swami saying that yes, a leader should have some, should selflessly love the people who are in the center so that he goes to the extent of even scolding them and reprimanding them so that they come back to the right path. Of course, this whole thing about I will do this for you and you do this for me is a very individualistic approach. And Swami says, it is all right if he is like that. But again, it is the discrimination of the person. If he is making him follow the rules of the organization and be in tune with Swami, it's fine. But if he is doing something else outside that, then the individual has to take the decision, isn't it?
Right. And I think very, very clearly so many points Swami is making there. One thing probably we forget, all of us, when we are in the organization is each one comes into the system for their own personal journey also.
True.
You know, most often when we get perturbed, it is when we forget that.
Correct.
We expect everybody else to be perfect for our spiritual journey.
Right.
We don't realize that each one comes in for their own churning. They're all improving in their own way. And Swami, physically, when we saw Swami managing things, we could see that Swami had his own way of tightening somebody somewhere, right, loosening something somewhere, always bringing in that bit of balance.
Right.
So there is nothing like too strict. I think Hislop is taking the example of someone whom probably in his opinion or in his judgment has been a bit too harsh, or someone who is using the favors that he gives to people to get them to, you know, side by him or whatever it is like that.
Right.
We can be sure that Swami has sensed it. Swami knows what he's saying. But at the same time, Swami is not deriding that quality itself. Swami is not saying that no, in the Sai organization, nobody should be strict.
Right.
You know, Swami is ensuring that that message is not sent forth. At the same time, Swami is saying that, you know, gratitude is a quality that you cannot take away from the equation. There was one devotee whom we were you know, whom he had the opportunity to interact with. That person is a, I think he runs a huge organization. I mean, commercially, he runs his own factories or something like that. And he does a lot of good to his employees. He takes very, very good care of his employees. But he kind of, you know, impresses upon them that this is not simply something being given to you because of your work or service. I am going overboard and doing this. This is something that I'm doing out of my compassion and goodness to you. And in return, he would ensure that they lead good lives. Right? And he would, in fact, openly say them, I mean, tell them that this I'm doing so that I can come and interfere in your life. Because if you do something wrong, I want the right to come and tell you that what you're doing in your personal life is wrong. For that ability to interfere in your life, I'm doing all this good for you. Right? Because he said that, because I feel that I cannot stop at merely doing monetarily good things to you or going out of the way and paying for your children's education. I am doing this so that I can correct you when I feel that something is wrong in the way you're doing things.
That is definitely a selfless...
Right, a selfless authority that you're seeking in the person's life.
Right.
So I think Swami is ensuring that that is not taken out of the equation.
Correct.
That if somebody is doing good out of their way and in return is seeking... I mean, I think in a way that's what Swami did with all of us.
Correct.
Right. The only thing that Swami expected for all the good that he did for us is you ensure that you're leading a good life.
Good life.
You're leading a good name. So Swami is ensuring that that is not taken out of the equation. At the same time, Swami is saying, yes, personally misusing the system, misusing people's gratitude to you, that is always wrong. That is, you don't have to discuss about that really.
True.
So that is one of the conversations that Swami speaks of. Then there's one about healing in Sai centers. I think that must have been a very hot topic in the 70s and 80s. And even now, thanks to Swami, we are far away from all of that.
Right.
It's easy for us to completely have our minds fixed on Swami and focus on Swami. But you know, there are a lot of things in the name of spirituality which gets practiced. Let's not use any names and that would appear like we are deriding some of these practices. But a lot of things which can be pushed under the carpet of spirituality. And when you say this is a spiritual organization, people think that these can be practiced in the organization. One of that is different kinds of healings.
True.
Which happen. There's a very beautiful conversation about that. When Swami says that the organization should reflect Swami's stance on some of these things, I think this is a very beautiful case in point.
Correct.
Hislop asked this question. Swami, there is a situation in California where a healer wishes to join a Sri Sathya Sai center and use his healing powers for the benefit of Baba's devotees. The leader of that particular center has had relief from illness by means of the power flowing from the hands of the healer and has the idea that the healer has been sent by Baba and that Baba is doing the healing through the person of that healer. I was requested to ask Swami for his viewpoint. And Swami's response to that, the power flowing from the healer is not Swami's power. It is evil power. The healer is himself in need of healing. Divine power is in every place. It arises from within. Both these bodies, pointing to Hislop and the driver of the car, Swami says, are strong and healthy, implying that the health was due to the divine power from power without the agency of any outside healer. Anything external is an infection or affliction. Then Hislop says, the healer also has a question. He asks if what he is doing is all right. And Swami says, no, it is not all right. It is not divine power flowing through the person of the healer. Hislop asks, how then should one be healed? By ordinary medical means and by prayer. Hislop says, but Swami, there are thousands of cases around the world of sick people being healed by healers. What about them? Swami says, any benefit is only a temporary feeling or relief that is not real. If a healing occurs, it is because the person has had a feeling or thought of God. Then, Hislop says, then power from God does not flow into a person. Swami says, where is God? He is within you. From within, he heals. Such a beautiful conversation, and it is, we are nobody to qualify Swami's words, but it nowhere deviates from Swami's purest message.
Mm.
Right? When you talk about somebody being healed by somebody's powers, much havoc is being created by, you know, such ideas in the Sai organization today.
Mm.
But imagine, this is a question that Swami is dealing with probably in the 70s or early 80s maybe.
Right.
Yeah, Swami is saying, what is the fundamental message of Swami?
Mm.
I am God, so are you, but you are not aware of it. The whole idea is to recognize that divine power within. So any idea that someone else is being a conduit of Swami's grace, Swami's power, Swami's healing, does not align itself with this fundamental message of Swami. And the moment you start using the Sai organization or the Sai center to promote anything like this, you are deviating from Swami's message. You are sending a wrong message to the people who come to the center. And I think Swami is very categorically deriding that.
And also the fact that he says, by normal methods, you take it by medicine or by prayer. You have any medical problem, you go take medicine and get cured. And that is such a, direct approach to this. And he says, or by prayer, like you can choose to pray because God is all the time in you. And from within, God is the one who's going to heal you. There is, moving on to another topic, there is a topic on bhakti. See, because bhakti is, of course, one of the main aspects of the Sai organization. And we have bhajans, and bhakti itself is one of the most important aspects of spirituality. So, Swami is saying, there is only one yoga, and that is bhakti yoga. All the others, Kriya Yoga, Hatha Yoga, and so-called Sai Yoga, Pranayama, all the methods and techniques known as yogas belong to the body. They are like drill exercises, right, left, up, down. Where is the result? They are worthless and waste of time. Bhakti Yoga is the direct path to God. It is the easy way. All others are useless. There are six types of bhakti. Madhura bhakti means sweet. This is the highest type. Then Hislop asks, what makes Madhura the highest? Swami says, in this the devotee sees everything as God. When Jayadeva would lift his clothes to put on, he would see Krishna in the garments and would not treat them as clothes. He would go about the streets unclothed and people would put a garment around him. He would talk with Krishna, sing to Krishna, dance with Krishna, merge with Krishna and fall senseless. He was the guru of Chaitanya. Then Hislop asked, Swami, the description sounds somewhat like Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. Swami says, Jayadeva, Chaitanya and Ramakrishna are in this Madhura stream of bhakti. Jayadeva saw himself as the bride of Krishna, and because of this, his songs are taken by the public with a worldly meaning as being lustful. Whereas the true meanings, the meanings that they had for Jayadeva are quite different. To himself, the heart was the bride. He was the Atma. What kind of person was Chaitanya? Chaitanya also would sing to Krishna and dance in ecstasy with Krishna. Once he visited an admirer, he was lodged in a room next to the prayer hall. Whenever food was offered to the five metal idol of Krishna, Chaitanya was observed to be eating at the same food in his room. The host decided to make a test. He locked Chaitanya in his room and there was some opening through which he could see Chaitanya. Food was offered to Krishna idol and Chaitanya was seen to be eating the food. The host entered the room and slapped Chaitanya on both cheeks. Upon this, the metal idol of Krishna disappeared. This caused great worry and the prayers were made to Krishna. Krishna appeared to the devotee and said, you offered food to me and then slapped me when I ate. So I went away. This is Swami is talking about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then Hislop says, his devotion had, and then Swami continues. Swami says, Chaitanya had Sachananda as a guru at one time. The guru wanted to test the devotion of Chaitanya. He placed a cube of sugar on Chaitanya's tongue and said to him to keep it there until he returned from the river. At the river, the guru bathed, washed clothes, did his singing and was away for some 2 hours. On returning, he found Chaitanya with his mouth still open and the cube of sugar vibrating somewhat, but intact on the tongue without any melting. Realizing Chaitanya's greatness and that his control of the senses was so complete, he prostrated and declared that Chaitanya was his guru. Then Hislop asks, "Swami, are there such people, complete devotees living today, such as Jayadeva and Chaitanya?" And then Swami says, "Oh yes, there are. But mostly they contain the devotion within themselves. Sometime it shows and the world judges the person to be of unsound mind." People can't understand that level of devotion. Then Swami says, "Swami has encountered such devotees, but he does not grant interviews. But the people live filled with joy. There was one such, a Rani, a queen, who was encountered a few years ago. It was not appropriate to the situation to grant interview." Then he asks, Dr. Hislop asks, "Is it possible for a Western person to be such a great bhakta?" Swami says, "Oh yes, quite possible." Hislop, "But Swami, for an office holder who has Swami's work to do in the world, which is the best bhakti?" And Swami says, "The same." There's no difference. He says, "The same. But how could one do his work if he were like that?" And Swami says, "It is quite possible to do work and at the same time be the highest bhakta. It is the feeling that is important for the work. Even in the case of Jayadeva and Chaitanya, their influence was widespread." Then Hislop says, "Swami, it seems to be the case that from the time of Krishna to Satyasai, there has been no opportunity." And Swami interrupts him and says, "Time? I am Krishna. Where is time?" This is the beautiful extract.
Right. And a theme that you can see almost through this conversation, and I mean, this is not necessarily specific to Hislop, because as Hislop was asking, but I think Hislop needed it a little more because of the spiritual journey that he had undertaken till that point.
Right.
But Swami is steering him towards that bhakti and madhura bhakti through all this. In fact, Swami tells in a discourse that this is the greatest secret. It's called Guhya Yoga, right? In Gita.
Mm.
And Swami says, this is the greatest secret that Krishna gave.
Mm.
He said, you have the ultimate and you have a mundane life.
Right.
How do you bridge the two?
Mm.
It's through bhakti.
Beautiful.
Is as you're going through life, you see that beautiful description of Jayadeva.
Mm.
He says, everything that you see only your Lord.
Right.
Everything that you eat is seen as prasadam. Whatever you do is done as an archana to the Lord. Wherever you walk, as they say, it becomes pradakshina.
Mm.
That idea of bridging every activity to that supreme nature. And if you really look at it, that is the purpose of the Satyasai organization.
Correct.
Right. There are people who, there are some people who come and say, whenever there are these events which are organized, the youth conference or the international conference, they say it is so draining.
Mm.
Really, because you have so many things to take care of. You're organizing food, you're organizing events. Mm. It, for a moment, it actually, when you're in the middle of that activity, you forget Swami completely.
Mm.
Right. But at the end of the day, when you come and say, there is a sense of fulfillment that, I've done this whole thing for Swami.
Right.
That experience of doing something so mundane, at the end of it, feeling that fulfillment, I think that has to be reflected in everything that you do. And I think that is what the organization presents as a chance in the center or the organization or a service activity that you take up. And I think that reflection of Swami's message is what a center must be.
Another very interesting point here. Swami says, there are many such great devotees, but I may not grant them interviews and it is not appropriate to. So, that is another very, very, I would say, a bit sensitive topic when it comes to the Sai organizations and when it comes to youth especially. You start idealizing someone You start. Anybody can talk about Swami. Anybody can give you a good message. Anybody can inspire you. And you have thousands of Swami's own discourses you can go back to and listen. But the moment you start idealizing someone because they have had proximity to Swami, physical proximity, and Swami has had. So what happens is sometimes it can go the other way. When that person has a change of mind, then the person who's following him is lost. Although his conscience is telling him that this is not what Swami must have wanted. So, you know, these things can come up in the practical working of an organization. But what Swami says here is that it's almost like don't judge anybody. Don't judge anybody. Just because I've called somebody several times and spoken to him, it's not that he's the greatest devotee. Or if I have not called somebody, that he's not a devotee. For all that you know, the person who is coming and cleaning and sweeping the Sai Center every day and maintaining the cleanliness might be the greatest devotee.
Right.
And so humble and so silent, he's doing his seva silently. So it's very, very, you cannot judge. This is a spiritual organization. You cannot look down upon anybody. You cannot look up to anybody. The best way to go about it is see Swami in everyone. Like if you see this act or this word of this person is connecting you with Swami, then yes, that is right. In fact, if you remember in the 1990 summer showers, there's a question comes. Swami asks, what is good and bad?
Mm-hmm.
Swami says, what takes you closer to God is good. What takes you away from God is bad.
Right.
So at any given point in time, is an influence taking you closer to Swami or is it taking you away from Swami? I think that is the simplest yardstick by which you can safely lead your life.
Define good and bad company.
Right, exactly.
Right. The joy of sometimes sitting in front of Swami, and when Swami is casually talking, is best when Swami suddenly recollects some old devotees.
Right.
Right. Who probably will not know that Swami is sitting there and talking about them. There are many occasions, be it in the portico in Prashantinilayam or in Thrai Vrindavan, all of a sudden Swami will recollect some devotee, especially when Swami will look at a boy and ask, where are you from?
Mm.
And he says, Swami, Machilipatnam, this and that. Swami will recollect.
Right.
I went there, they gave me this that day. I think this must have happened probably when you were a student, when Swami suddenly picked up one boy.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of those occasions when Swami said, whoever answers a question that I ask, I'll give a ring and I'll take you to Kodai or something like
right,
that.
Right.
And Swami asked a question. It looked like Swami randomly picked up one boy and Swami gave him a ring as promised before the question was asked.
Mm.
And the warden said, Swami, very glad that Swami picked up this boy because he's a very good boy. He does a lot of work in the hostel. He takes care of the kitchen.
Mm.
Swami like literally put him off and cut him like that. And Swami said, why are you telling me? You think it has not reached me? You know, that boy is doing out of love for me. He's doing it as an offering to me. You think I don't know about it? As though you have to introduce.
Correct.
Right? And then for the next 15 minutes, Swami spoke about that boy's father.
Oh.
Who apparently, goes every day. I think this must be Shivam Mandir, one of these mandirs of Swami. He was the first person who used to go there, open the mandir, sweep the place, keep the altar ready, much before anybody comes for bhajans and all that. And Swami, for the next 15 minutes, speaks about this boy's father, whom Swami has not physically spoken to. And nobody has come and told Swami that, Swami, this person takes care of this.
Mm.
And Swami spoke about him and Swami spoke about this boy, what he does. And Swami, at the end of it, Swami looked at the warden and Swami said, so many years you are with Swami, still you have not understood Swami.
Oh.
Swami said, you're surprised when Swami reveals something like this. And there are any number of devotees like that who are touching Swami's heart.
Yes.
Like this. And I think that inspiration is available everywhere. As you said, if we are going to go with the blinkers, who are those people who have had many interviews with Swami, who have sat in the portico, then you might find a handful. And in that, some will get filtered out through these other methods that we said. But if we were to look at inspiration, those who love Swami, those who are, you know, that Madhura Bhakti that Swami spoke about, that inspiration is available plenty around us.
In fact, I can never forget these words of Dr. Narasimhan.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Narasimhan is heading the mobile hospital, mm-hmm, Seva, and right now he's the director of the general hospital here as well. Once he was just sharing, and somebody asked him, "Sir, what is your greatest desire in life? What is that burning desire you have in life?" And sir, they used to go to these villages with this medical camp, and they used to do the seva through the day. And what sir used to do is, he used to go back to the village at night and then tell the children stories, talk to them about how preventive health care,
mm-hmm,
and then show them the story of Prahallada, inspire the children that, mm-hmm, you can, mm-hmm, lead your life like this. And so much more than just, you know, administering medicines. This was a like overall package. And so when somebody asked him, "What is this desire you have?" He said, "Just doing seva in this manner, somewhere in an unknown village, on an unknown hill, this body should drop dead. That's the only wish I have."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is something which comes with so much of feeling. He's not looking for name. He's not looking for recognition. He's not looking for an award. He's just doing, just like Swami defined the leader, says he is doing it for the bliss that is there in it. That's it.
And Swami would say, you know, I mean, those words literally ring, Manchi Bhaktalaru. Good devotee.
Good devotee.
He was
That's
a good,
it.
This one. Just that word, you know, Swami recollecting whatever you've done, and Swami saying that is happening even now. Right?
That's,
even now you can, yes, imagine Swami sitting and saying he was a good devotee.
Good devotee. Yeah. And as we all know, Swami has always been against publicity. So there's this another interesting section where Hislop is asking, "Swami, new centers with maybe only 3 people want to have some other people come to their meetings, but months pass and nobody comes. Could they do something like posting a notice of their meeting at places like health and food stores?" Like advertisement for, so he's asking, I mean, such a practical question.
It's a practical thing, right?
And then he's saying, "Swami, you're having the intention of doing good to many more people.
Mm.
And so can we not inform them that we are going to have this?" And Swami says, "No. Swami prefers that additional people come only through observing the virtuous lives of the center members and by word of mouth." How clear it is. Just see what Swami says. "Notices and such might start small, but in time they will get out of hand. Even such small things as notices will be taken as an advertising for Swami. Other Swamis have to advertise and even provide transport." But Sai does no advertising. Yet thousands come. "Sai even tells the people here to go home, but they stay. There is this difference." Then Hislop says, "Then the small centers will need to just patiently wait for membership increases?" Swami says, "Yes." Of course, then there is a slight change in the discussion where he says, "Swami, some questions arise in American centers for which I do not have an answer. Many people of Jewish faith do not understand why the symbol of the Jewish faith is not included in the Sai symbol of all religions. Since the Jewish people exceed in numbers, some of the religions represented in the Sai symbol. It is not," then Swami says, "it is not through any intention that the Jewish symbol is excluded. In India, there is not a general awareness that the Jewish symbol is substantially different. Does the cross fail to symbolize the Jewish faith to a substantial degree?" Swami is asking him. And then Hislop says, "Yes, Swami, there is a substantial difference." Then Swami says, "Then let the Jewish people make a proposal to us and we will give consideration to it." How beautiful, and how, I would say, very, very clear instructions on publicity and very clear instructions on how a person should get inspired to join the organization by seeing the lives, by seeing the calm, the demeanor, the way a person of the Sai Center speaks to others, treats others. I think live the message. I think that is what Swami wants.
No, this this episode, which not episode, Professor Nanjunde used to tell, who was later the controller of examinations. People might not know, when he came and became a lecturer in the Arts and Science College in Vrindavan,
mm-hmm.
he was a very, very popular professor in the Bangalore University.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, it's a class which students would never want to miss.
Okay.
And he is known to be very, very strict,
mm-hmm.
very good at his subject.
Mm-hmm.
At any time when he's taking a class, there would be a few hundred students sitting in the class. You know, those typical galleries of the universities in India.
Right.
From there, when he came to know of Swami, became devoted to Swami, and this opportunity to be a lecturer in Swami's college came, he left everything and came off.
Right.
And when he came here, there were 12 students, 10 students, maximum of 20 students.
Mm.
And the standard was equally good, right? Because there were other lecturers like himself who were all very good teachers. But then the numbers were so less.
Mm.
So he went to Swami and said, Swami, we're giving such good education here, and the discipline is so good, and Swami is here. People are not aware of this college.
Mm.
So should we put some advertisement in the paper saying that Arts and Science College is there? And Swami said, no, I don't like all that.
Mm.
No, Swami, at least they will be aware that this college is there. And when they're applying to the Bangalore University, they will consider this also as an option. And Swami said, no. Our students will be their announcement.
Wow.
They will announce.
Mm.
They will be the announcement, and people will come to know. So he left it at that.
Mm.
And he said at the end of the year, the top ranker of the Bangalore University from us was our college.
First from Swami's college.
Right, Swami's college. So instantly everybody is wondering, where is the Satya Sai College? And people are curious about it.
Mm.
The next semester, there are 4 gold medalists.
Oh.
The semester after that, there were more students. So automatically people are like wondering, where is this Satya Sai College? So many, and that word that Swami said, the performance of the college should be the advertisement, right? So what is the performance of a Sai Center? It's the nature of the people. Mm. When Swami, going back to that initial discussion, when Swami said, when Hislop asked, what should I go and speak to them? Speak to them about duty.
Right.
If you're a doctor coming to the Sai Center, you'll be better at performing your duty wherever you're working. If you're a teacher who's coming to the Sai Center, people will look at you and say that this teacher stands out. This person seems to be better at what he is doing or she is doing. That is the best advertisement for Swami's message and Swami's organization. Right? And very clearly, Swami, these are things which are very difficult to follow. I mean, there's no doubt about that. Right, the organization,
especially in today's day of social media, etc.,
right.
Like the spirit with which Swami did every action, these were spontaneous actions. I remember this episode from Kodaikanal, which we have, of course, spoken about many times. In the year 1999, for Ishwaramma Day, there was this Narayan Seva which was done, and Swami went around, and the Narayan Seva went on very well, and May 6th. So along with the food that was served, prasadam that was served, each one was given a blanket, because this is Kodaikanal and it can get very cold. And then there was this whole pile of blankets left in the mandir. And Swami called one of the elders, and Swami said, the elder came and told Swami, Swami, even after distributing to all the people here, so many blankets are left. And Swami said, what is this? Is this some publicity? Are you trying to impress me by this? And then Swami told him that people who have come here have had the benefit of getting this blanket. But what about people who have not come here? What about them who do not know that this Narayan Seva is going on? So what Swami did was, Swami got into a jeep, into his car, and there was a jeep right behind Swami's car with the pile of blankets, and Swami went into every street of Kodaikanal, and he was out for nearly an hour. He went to every street And as he was driving, he would see a person who might be needing this help, and he would stop and indicate, and a blanket would go out that would be given to that person. So there is this element of spontaneity, which is very, very far from publicity. So like in all Swami's projects, you go and tell him, Swami, we have served 300 people, we have served 500 people. But Swami is saying, have you spoken to even one of them and found out, are they happy? When in fact in the hospital they said, Swami, we have treated 10,000 patients or whatever the number was. I am not here for the numbers. I am not here for the quantity. I want the quality. Have you spoken to them? Has it inspired them? Has it touched them? So I think that is what Swami always did. And by doing publicity and by giving, if you remember, there was that other question. We said, why doesn't the government come and take over the Sai organization and Swami's institutions? And Swami says, it is not that the government does not know. They are well aware of the work that Swami is doing. Yes, if the government takes over, it can become a very big organization. It can become a very well-established setup. But to what purpose? That is not Swami's purpose. Numbers are not Swami's purpose. The quality is Swami's purpose. And one more thought which comes to mind is when Swami came to our studio, Swami said, in many organizations, you have only sight and hearing. Like that is referring to the publicity, you know, you see a banner or you see something and then you hear about it and all that. But Swami says, in our samsthan, in our organization, all the five should come together. Seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, everything. All that means, what Swami is saying is, there should be unity of approach. You cannot talk something, you cannot see something, you cannot do something. Everything should be united. And that should come with that spontaneity of love rather than with publicity.
Right. No, and talking about this idea of putting flyers and things like that, reminded of a talk I heard recently, a conversation of a person, you know, who was telling about how he came to the center, the Sai Center. He had heard about Swami. It's a long story. You'll not get into all of that. So, you know, those were the days when you used to have these community centers kind of a thing.
Right.
It's a library sort of a thing where you can go and borrow books. They would even have cassettes, documentaries and movies, and you could hire it and then go and give it back. So wherever he was living, there was one such community center where he used to go and borrow books and cassettes. So he happened to borrow a cassette from somewhere. It was about something completely different. At the end of it, there was a small clipping of Swami. Okay, so he saw that and that triggered some memory which he had earlier. So he went back to that center and he said, you know, there is a film at the end of it. I want to know more about this person. Can you give me some information? So that lady looked at that, the lady at the counter looked at it and said, I have no idea who this is. And, you know, we are just a community center. Whoever gives, we just categorize them and put it in the shelf. So we have no idea of who gave and what is it and all that. So he said, okay. And he says, can I borrow another book? He said, yeah, you can go and see. But I don't think we have any book on this person whom you're saying. So again, he goes and he looks around. And when he's searching, he says one book from the top shelf falls on his head.
Oh my God.
Right? A cassette. Another cassette falls on his head. And this was a cassette which was one of the documentaries made by Richard Bock.
Beautiful.
So he goes back and he plays it. And he's like in tears, and that was what he was looking for. At the end of it, no, it was just written, produced by some Sai Center. And a number was given. So at some 11 in the night or something, he calls up that number. Because he's saying, I was so restless. I wanted to know more about Swami. And this gentleman picked up and he was like a little annoyed, you know, kind of so late. And then he said, no, I just saw your number in this particular tape. I wanted to know, oh, it is about Swami. Then you can call me at any time. There's no problem. He said, tell me what information you want. And he gave him the address. You know, who are we to put notices and posters about Swami when Swami is hand-picking and drawing. Like, you know, like Shri Baba said, he's the the twine that is tied to the sparrow's feet is in his hand. He pulls.
Right. In fact, I believe it is Hislop who has had this conversation again with Swami, but I don't find it in this book, the conversation. Mm-hmm. But I heard it that he was asking Swami, is it all right that we allow people to wear shoes and come into the center mm-hmm. like they do in churches? Is it all right if they sit as families and pray together mm-hmm. like they do elsewhere? And is it all right to have bhajans changed into an English language mm-hmm. and sing the English bhajans and all that? And Swami said, no. They should follow the way the bhajans are being sung here. They should follow the discipline. They should follow the rules. The gents and the ladies should be seated separately. And they should sing the bhajans the way it is sung here. Because every name has a power. And then he said, Swami, if this is going to be the case, then we are going to start losing out people. People are not going to come to the center. And Swami says, let them not come. And then the next question is what is most interesting. He says, Swami, suppose there is a Sai center or a samiti, and people stop coming to that samiti. Can we close that center? Then Swami says, no. Once you open a center, Swami's energy is passing through. And it is reaching the people who visit that center. So once you open, don't close. Even if there is one person, let that person continuously do what is a part of the schedule. Let him do. Automatically, people will be drawn. Automatically, people who are inspired shall come and join the center.
Right. In fact, there's another conversation where he speaks about people not coming to the center, though they are devotees, and what is the thing is very interesting. He says, Swami, in the American Sai organization, we presently require all office bearers to pay for all the expenses of their office.
Mm-hmm.
Swami says, that is correct. Mm. Additional expenses must come from American Sai organization.
Mm.
So that's another discipline. I think it's a different topic, which is there in another conversation also. Then Hislop says, there could be about 50,000 or more people in the USA who are Sai devotees, but less than 1,000 who are in the centers.
Mm.
The organization seems to be of minor importance. Why bother with it?
Mm.
Even the United Nations has dozens of non-organizational Sai devotees.
Mm.
Non-organizational Sai devotees. Mm. And Swami replies to that. He says, the organization gives a chance to people.
Mm.
In America and other countries, there are large numbers of people who know about Sai, have faith in him, talk about him, his leelas and his teachings, but who do not join the organization. The organization imposes some discipline and requirements which these people do not wish to take on.
Mm.
The Sai organization may be limited in size now, but as time goes on, it will attract so many people the general public will not be able to be accommodated in Sai gatherings. All available spaces will be assigned to the people within the Sai organization. Thus, the Sai organization membership affords a chance. For example, you are a chairman of the American Sai organization and Bhuzani is the officer of the foundation. Because of this, you are in the car with Swami. Having some 9 hours of interview instead of half an hour of interview room. Swami is saying that attracted to these perks, quote unquote, people will come. And, you know, the Swami is saying in the 70s, and we are literally seeing that in some of the events which are happening here, be it the youth conference. I still recall the youth festival that happened in 2007.
Right.
Right, when they had to strictly restrict the numbers and they said they had not opened it up for the Indian organization because they said it'll get flooded.
Right.
Because they had limited seats and you had to have it in the Purnachandra auditorium or the leadership program that is being held every year, you know, except for the past 2 years because of the lockdown. The leadership program was also strictly for the people. You know, they have to say that you have to be a part of the center, you have to be contributing in this manner to the activities that are happening, and then the center has to nominate you.
Mm.
So much of fuss about that because
they don't have place.
The place is not there.
Mm.
And you know, literally what Swami is telling here, that people will know that to be a part of the organization will give you certain benefits.
Mm.
And because of that, they will be ready to endure the disciplines of the organization, which they will benefit from. It is not like anybody else benefits from the disciplines the Sai organization imposes.
Very true. In fact, one of the points which came out in the discourse clip that you read right in the beginning, another very important aspect is about following the rules of the land. So as far as the Atma is concerned, there are no rules, there are no regulations. But then when an organization is set up and when you are a part of a certain country or a certain region, Swami was one who would always follow the rules laid down by the government. And I think that goes without saying, and that is how the Central Trust has always, at any point in time, if there is a rule that has been made by the government, it follows. Because when it comes to practical matters of finance, when it comes to practical matters of the ashram, accommodation, food, everything, there's a very practical approach to these things. And if you look at one of the very, very sensitive issues that is always a part of the Sai organization is about money. And when you're talking about collecting money and contributing money, etc., I think the best way to approach this is the way Swami has followed in the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust. What Swami has done is he has kept it so transparent. You cannot be more transparent than this. You have the bank and you have, anybody can walk in and contribute the amount they want to contribute. And nobody needs to know about it. We have heard stories that people have come and silently donated $1 million. And I have been an eyewitness because I had gone to the bank. Mm-hmm. There's a bank extension here. Mm-hmm. Inside the ashram. I had gone to withdraw some money and I was an eyewitness to an old lady. She has come as Sevadal from the Maharashtra, from the state of Maharashtra and some village in Maharashtra.
Mm-hmm.
And she came with 20 rupees and she wanted to donate it to the Central Trust.
Mm-hmm.
And the bank manager was very patiently, lovingly explaining to her, you should sign here and you should do this. And then this amount will go to the trust. And she was given a vibhuti packet and she was given photograph. I was so moved. I said, she felt that she should contribute to Swami's thing. So I think this has been a very, very sensitive matter. But absolute transparency is what Swami always stood for, isn't it?
In fact, there is probably we'll conclude with this passage where Swami is talking about money in the organization. Because Islap says that Swami, in this matter, I'm not clear. Why is Swami so strict about not having any kind of money involved in the organization? He says, I do not understand the principle. It seems to me, and it does to most Americans, that almost no value is given to that which is free. Whereas when money has to be paid, care is given, attention is given, and what cost money is valued. Okay, and Swami's response to that is, yes, at first that is the case, but it does not last. The value given is sudden and like fireworks, it rises and rises fast. But like fireworks, the fall is also fast. With the payment of money, there is no love or appreciation. You go to the shop and pay for what you want. Why thank the seller or have any appreciation? You paid in full and that is the end of it. A guru will start a philosophy, a method of sadhana. Money will be charged and paid. Interest will rapidly expand and people will think they must join and take part. Then in a few years, where is it all? A recent example is a young person. The world over, people gave money to receive instructions. Where is he now? So Swami is telling that the Sai organization should never go into that kind of a thing. Swami does not like that. He builds slowly, but it is firm and sound, and it continues. You remember Prashanta Nilayam 14 years ago, and now you see the slow but solid growth of Swami's works. Right? And all that is because of no solicitation, no advertisement.
Correct.
And like those people who gave that 20 rupees.
The purity with which the money has been given. And again and again, it is the quality and not quantity. This is something which Swami has spoken even when he came to the studio. I think there is always a difficulty when you look at some of Swami's teachings and you think they are too idealistic for a practical running of an organization. But again and again, it's our duty to remind ourselves that it is for this that we are joining the organization. We are not here to put up a big show. We are not here to do very big things. Yes, you can do big things, but at what cost, with what intention, with what spirit? You cannot force anybody to do anything. Swami would always say it should come from the source. It is not by force. And these are things that everybody in the organization, including all of us, should always keep in mind.
Right. So I think those are the different passages. I think most of the passages we have covered where Swami spoke about the organization.
Right.
We might have left a few, but I think we did bring that in the discussion too. So that, dear listeners, is the summary of that book with a special session dedicated to whatever instructions Swami gave to the organization. So I think we have done a fair bit of summary of this book. We thank you all for the encouragement and the mails asking us to do the summary. That's why we were also emboldened to do it. So thank you for that. So I think with this, we truly and surely come to the conclusion of the book, The Conversations with Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba. Though we say we've come to the conclusion, you know, you could do a program or an episode or a satsang on the Gita. It doesn't mean that you're going to stop quoting from the Gita.
Right.
You know, the inspiration that comes from a work like that is eternal. You end up going back to it every now and then, as people have complained about me. And I think that is going to be the same about a book like Conversations with Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba. We will keep going back to it for inspiration, for clarity. And though we say that we've completed the summary, completed going through it, we will keep going back to it every now and then in whatever topic we take up. But as an offering, I think we've come to the end of this book. We thank you all for all the encouragement and support. And thanks to all of you, we have had the opportunity to go through this book in such detail. We most humbly offer it. And Bhagwan's Lotus Feet, we're going to leave you with a bhajan on the other side of it. Brother Ganesh and Bhargav will join you for the program Veda Jignasa. Till we meet you all next time, take care. Jai Sai Ram.
राधा लोला रम्य सुचेला राधा लोला रम्य सुचेला
वेणुविलोला विजय गोपाला
वेणुविलोला
ఏదా రమము